Radio Outcast is a show-stopping, gunslinging podcast for mature audiences. Content warning. This episode contains depictions of emotional manipulation and emotional abuse throughout the episode, and mentions of body horror, graphic injuries, and terminal illness near the end of the episode, which may be upsetting for some listeners. We encourage our listeners to prioritize their safety before venturing ahead. Thank you.
Indeed. I suppose these strange means of transmission follow a day most ludicrous itself. It seems only fitting.
Pardon me. Yes, sorry. If you could just... Brilliant. Oh, thank you. Yes. Excuse me.
He's back!
Well, it's quite the joyous welcome.
Don't flatter yourself just yet. She just wants those peanuts you're carrying.
Ah, but for a moment I believed myself more than my nutty duty.
Peanut wrangling ain't your duty. Your duty is map making, which you've been failing at ever since you no longer have that talking machine of yours to lean on anymore. That little drawing of yours we've been following around since Deadwood looked more like a coffee stain than the Missouri River.
Peanuts, please.
Perhaps once dear Jesse has released your hands from his ever-judgmental grip.
My grip ain't judgmental, and neither am I.
Okay.
I ain't! Truth of the matter is, we got lucky with that circle clue back at the cult, and though a circle should be easy enough to draw on a map, all you got for us is somewhere towards Yankton, perhaps? and a showboat is quite the stylish mode of transportation with the most venerated entertainers outside of, how do you say it, elevated circles perform, and the perfectly average gambling officiants revel. Did I get that right?
Look at you. That was the funniest thing I've heard you say. But you have to make your words a little longer next time, like this. Oh, the Missouri River. River of abundance, wild as it is luring. Blah, 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 blah.
Firstly, I said perfectly average gambling aficionados, not officiants. That would be absurd. That wouldn't make any sense. Secondly, I made us a new map. I set up our transportation, and I found us a bit of entertainment to pass this dreary trip through Dakota. A rare thank you may be in order.
Thank you, Charles.
Now, Jesse, don't sink this vessel with the weight of your boundless gratitude. Are you nearly done with her hands, Rogers, or not? I do not plan on carrying 3 bags of peanuts all night.
I wouldn't have to check on her bandages if Barefoot hadn't been so dumb and desperate to find the next tower. Going off on her own, climbing trees, then returning to camp, tail between your legs. Pure dumb luck if you didn't break your neck.
Ugh, it's been like 3 days. When will the lectures end?
When I don't have to keep fixing you up every week. Now sit tight. Almost finished. There. Go nuts.
Go nuts. Indeed. Your bag of peanuts, my dear. And another.
Thank you. Anyhow, Osgood, why are we all the way up front?
The man who told me about this boat, Starlight Leisure, insisted that my companions and I sit front row center in case there were any need for audience participation.
What?
Yes. A small trade, indeed, and I managed to haggle the cost of our three tickets down to nearly the price of one.
Impressive.
Yes. Though I have been left largely to my own devices since our last conversation, Emmy, I have made the best of an inconvenient situation. Jesse had been complaining about crossing the river being impossible with the horses. Helix's self-sustained injuries made the trek on horseback even more precarious. And so I, of course, saved the day. I brought us here to this emerald showboat pulled by a small gray engine boat, the Starlight Leisure, and secured us safe passage down the Missouri River. So I sat there with my two companions, blissfully unaware of what was to pass, snapping peanut shells open in a crowd of about 100 equally eager passengers in the grand hall right beside the orchestra pit. And then a gentleman with a fashionable yellow topper who sold me our tickets appeared, fellow dandy with a tuxedo top hat and a formidable mustache. Now he walked down the aisle, up a short flight of steps, and to center stage.
Greetings, you disgusting lot. Welcome to the Starlight Leisure. Across the world, Paris built a tower that shall one day grow taller than any building before it. And yet here we are, adrift this river destined to crash into a meager tower.
The man in the top hat walked twice as fast as anyone and spoke with as much hurry. And then he looked at Helix and grinned slowly. His eyes met mine then, and there was something about the look, like he had been expecting us. He then rolled his eyes and proceeded.
Welcome, halfwits, to the Starlight Leisure. Please filter in, everyone. You're late, but the show shall wait. Agog, agon, leave the horses, mind your voices. La maison is sacred. Come.
Did that man say halfwits?
No, I'm sure he didn't say
my name is the Alderman. I'm one of 12 aldermen. Please do not strip the article "the" from my title. We've been sat on this river waiting for you for, oh, some interminable length of time. Yes, yes, of course. I recognize the look on your faces. Strangers. Indeed, you fools. And your names? Oh, shall I fabricate names for you then?
Are you talking to us?
I jest. Of course, we know your names. Claude, Dillard, and Dunce. Now please, make your way out here at once.
I'm not getting on that stage.
Jesse.
What else shall you do? Stare obliquely into your boots until the leather gives way? Certainly not. Come, come.
Come now, it was part of the deal. Anyhow, I'm sure it will be painless, Rogers. We'll be right there at once.
There, this one here, and right at the spot. You will perform for the voices. Now, I trust you have no questions.
Actually, what are we...
On our bill tonight, might I greet you to myself, the Alderman, and accompanying me in a feast of act for your undeserving eyes, these three people. I believe their names are Mongoose...
No. The names are Jesse Rogers, Charles Osgood, and Helix.
Well, since this grim gentleman wishes to steal the spotlight, we shall provide him justly. Technicians!
I was still railing and not quite sure what was really going on, but I do love the theater. Broadway, off-Broadway, high school productions, backyard productions. I was looking forward to a bit of a spectacle, though Jesse sure wasn't. A small boy and a small girl rushed toward us from the wings. They looked almost identical, like pre-tween twins. Okay. The boy had on long brown boots, like the kind you might go hunting with, and a floppy hat. And the girl wore a pink dress with a droopy white bow wrapped around her waist. They ushered me and Charles off the stage, where Jesse was left all on his own. Poor guy. The boy then jumped up and down as he pulled on ropes and the curtains drew open to a painting of some woods. A fancy arts and crafts project. A stone well made out of papier-mâché to the stage.
Behold, a wishing well. From the Europeans' terrible notion that water is home to deities, to now this stage. I give you one free wish.
All I gotta do is wish something, and then I can leave.
A wish is as good as a mile, don't you know? Now go on. Tell me, which wish itches to squish its way onto the pitch?
Wish to be off the stage.
Tsk, tsk. That's no wish. Try again. More heart this time.
More heart. Alright then. I wish I had in my hands the best book of poems ever written.
Yes. Poetry. One moment.
Do you have any poetry?
Poetry! I'm afraid the ink has smeared so the well is fresh out. Try again. Come on now, any wish. But make it a good one.
I don't know. Guess I wish reverence, goodwill, and justice would spread across this nation.
Goodwill, eh? One moment.
Do you have any reverence, goodwill, and justice to spare?
I'm afraid they don't carry abstract concepts, my boy. I do say you're quite horrid at this. Let's try something else.
The girl ran back to the stage and glared at Jesse before wheeling her well back to the wings. The boy jumped up and down again, while tugging at ropes, and the background behind Jesse and the alderman changed into the exact same painting, though this time a version that was in the night. The bright yellow lights were exchanged for blue ones. Then the alderman took out two headbands with large antlers from his coat pocket and gave one to Jesse. Jesse looked over at Charles and I, so we both gave him a sympathetic thumbs up. He sighed and took off his hat, trading them for the antlers.
Okay, once more. We are moose in the forest. We are getting ready to brawl.
What? What the hell are you doing?
How are we expected to fight without first establishing a quarrel? Stop speaking human and start speaking moose.
I'm 2 seconds from fighting you as is. You're insane.
So difficult. One more change then, shall we?
The alderman tossed the antlers as the set changed one more time. This time, the backdrop resembled a pretty cozy and modest kitchen, except it was warped to look twice as tall as an actual kitchen. But look, he's actually looking pretty ticked off now. Charles, I'm gonna go stop this and drop the curtains.
Stop fretting, Helix. I'm sure the alderman will be wrapping up soon. Rogers can bear it a moment longer, and I can certainly enjoy watching it for a moment longer.
Okay. Let us have some tea before bed.
Alderman? More like addle-headed.
Tea. We're in a kitchen, and it's nighttime. So we must drink tea. How about chamomile? Or the frog in your throat?
I'm fine.
Fine? You've been screaming and crying all day like a baby with colic. Your voice is practically croaking.
I said my voice is... But you cut that shit out.
Yes, I suppose we'd move past the animal jokes. Hey, I have a deer with no eyes. Do you know what I call it?
A deer with no eyes?
Yes! A deer with no eyes. No idea.
Look, I've been a good sport, but I'm getting real sick and tired of your damn word game. Are you mocking me?
Oh, that wasn't me. It was the night. You see, it's in morning.
You son of a...
But your voice isn't the only thing that's croaked.
Don't go acting all surprised.
On this eve, look what you've done. The voices seethe with rage. Off with you, and send out the white-haired clown. Perhaps he shall be more fun.
You're up, white-haired clown.
How do I look?
Same as ever. Oh, wait, you've got a peanut shell.
Get it.
I got it. Either of you changed your minds yet?
Oh, where has our next star traveled? Has he crashed and broken his skull? Gee, if that is indeed the case, then we may need to use it as a fruit bowl.
I'm here! Hello, here!
Let me tell you, the neck crack I got waiting for Osgood's soliloquy. As if the man didn't already walk through the days as if he were on stage delivering lines.
Technicians, wardrobe hence.
The children that had been working alongside the elder men scurried from the wings of the stage to Charles, carrying twigs and yarn with them. They each wrestled him one way or the other.
Little tight, thank you. No, I don't wear hats, thank you.
Till at last, they got him looking like a well-dressed tree. Branches going out one way or the other, wooden cutouts of grass in front of his feet, and a hat in the shape of a green cloud that was likely meant to look more like a cluster of leaves. Just as soon as they got him to stand still, the lights on stage went black.
Excuse me. Hello.
Shh. Elsewhere in a field of green, Een stood an elm tree, obedient and keen. Een, its branches reached high and took in the sun. Un, while everyone else got to run around and have real fun. Un.
Then two children ran across the stage, each riding a hobby horse, laughing and dancing in circles around poor Osgood, who thought he was about to be the star, but was actually cast as nothing more than foliage.
The elm stood tall, taking in the sky's light. Light. Doing nothing it wasn't meant to do, remaining perfectly green, leafy, and slight. Light.
Wait a minute. You mean to say I'm expected to stand here and do nothing? That's absolutely a waste of my
time. Don't you know that trees are meant to stand still, be quiet, and only be seen? What else did you expect? Now please, don't intervene.
Mr. Alderman, can't I be more than just this? I mean, this must be a story. Some hidden depth. I do have deep roots, after all. Anything more than leaves and branches. Perhaps I have aspirations and goals. A particularly enticing fruit, perhaps? At least an obstacle. Perhaps a woodpecker has made my life a living...
Well, the tree was truly such a master at obedience. Some might have even called it a hunting dog. Og.
Woof.
It sucked moisture from the ground all day while standing at attention, never leaving its post, no matter rain, sleet, or fog. Og.
That was a bad rhyme. You forced that rhyme.
True enough, the little ones ran onto the stage with a strange machine and a thick gray something. I'd personally call it more smoke than fog. Slowly filled the stage. They pointed the mouth of the thing straight at Charles, and as the haze grew denser and wider, it had swallowed him from foot to neck, almost completely.
Quiet down, tree, or your motivation will be to turn into paper. Tur. You wouldn't want to miss out on your chance to shine, all thanks to a bit of vapor.
This is all so absurd.
For the first time ever, me and Osgood were on the same page. Though Charles maintained character, holding his arms up and away from him in the stiff and angled shapes of branches. And though he didn't move a single step, his face glowed red. looked like he was barely restraining himself as the elder man fella shouted rhymes from the orchestra pit. Felt bad for him.
The tree grew upward with devotion. Its long branches and forever uncut. But no matter its height, heaven was too high for his nut. This is something upon which you can always depend. And so our story has reached the end.
That's it? That's all there is to my big number?
Yes, indeed. You may lower your branches now.
Mistress, it is an odd moon when I, myself, Charles Thelonious Osgood, am perplexed by the machinations of a man's performance.
Now we progress. Technicians!
As before, the alderman's command prompted a blinding flash of light. The children rushed back on stage with booming quick footfall, shoving my companions beside me. The goddess, the revenant cowboy, and I shielded our eyes from the incessant assault of light. Yellow, then red, then yellow, then blue, and violet and green. And in those seemingly unending seconds of blindness, the scene changed. We were each forced into costumes. Around us, a new backdrop. A strange living space, what I imagine you would call not of this time, decorated with a couch, a table, a dresser in the common room, a dining table downstage right, a wood door with a crystal window pane upstage, and a precarious set of stairs coming down from the ceiling, leading to nothing.
We arrive at the final act. Extraordinary, illusionary, adamantine, and myself, the alderman of this eve. Each with a role, each a narrative. But what story shall we see, What shall this starlight leisure witness now?
The lights flashed yet again. I rubbed the stars away and found Helix under a single spotlight. She was in a bright red jumpsuit with a silver lightning bolt going from her neck to her pelvis.
Wait, why is the spotlight on me? I don't know what's going on.
On this eve, at least. Take the damned papers, Madame Extraordinary.
Helix looked down, as did I, to find one of the children holding out a script for me. When I glanced up, Jesse and Helix, too, I couldn't believe it. From a tree to speaking role. Jesse's outfit had also changed. He was wearing a new set of clothes. A red plaid dress shirt tucked into a pair of workers' denim. And I myself was wearing a black short-sleeve shirt covered in white paint, made to look like part of a tuxedo and chef's hat.
Mork and Mindy?
What?
Robin Williams. Mork and Mindy. It's a show about an alien from space who meets a human woman and learns about Earth. This was our favorite show. Dre and I used to watch the reruns together all the time. Coda, I... Okay. Hopefully we're almost to Yankton, right?
Of course.
Don't worry, Coda. It's fine. It's just a show. Nuna, Nuna. Helix to the All-Mother. Come in, All-Mother. Helix to the All-Mother. Come in, All-Mother.
And so continues the scene, this time with a light beaming down on all of us on the stage, including the alderman, who had not changed clothes.
You want me to read this out loud?
Yes, before I place my head between the damn rudders.
Woohoo! I'm just so excited to have you all here for our Welcome Back the Red M&M Party. After 11 long years of a great wrong has been made right.
Not that I'm complaining. A party is a party is a party. But don't you think that's strange?
Not at all, Murphy. I'd say a strange reason for a party would be abolished upper tax rates. It's morning again in America and the Ray Jan Revolution.
Oh, Dre, if you wanted to scare me, why didn't you throw a Halloween party in July next time?
great idea, Murphy. Now, where has my dance partner for tonight gone? I wanted to get a conga line going.
I'm right here, Dre. Sorry. This is the last act, right? You promise?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
Hey there, Helix. What's the matter?
Oh, nothing. I wanted to tell you something, but the All-Mother said it was too dangerous.
Whatever it is, you're a goddess. I'm sure you'd make sure nothing bad happened. And I'll be with you even if it does.
Okay. You see, it looks like I've been stung.
By a bee? Are you allergic?
No, by Cupid. I love you.
Read it.
Your eyes are leaking.
What do you mean, beloved? I'm not crying. Oh, no, but I am bleeding. What do you mean, bleeding?
Sorry,
what the devil's going on?
Can you stop? It's not... I don't know where you got the script, but I'd rather swim to the next tower than keep going.
But it's the final act! In retrospect, perhaps I should have been more empathetic, but your tortures have become quite common by now, and I'll admit, I was delighted to have a speaking part. Forgive me for speaking so plainly, but I think by now the charade between us may end, Mistress. Because whatever mischief was cooked up for us on that river, it could be from no one else but you to make a point. To each of us. And judging by the way Helix held up the script to her chest and kept looking to the stairs to run away off stage, this was something cutting. But the show must go on.
I will have you drown if you ruin my show. You there, continue hence.
Dre, what's happened? You're bleeding. You're dying.
You? It's all her fault. The silly alien goddess. I heard her. She knew it was dangerous. Violated nature and indulged in fantasy. Helix from Elix, didn't the gods of Elix warn you? The gods don't debase themselves with love. It only brings chaos and destruction to the world.
That's not what happened. No one warned me. I didn't know this could happen. I didn't want this to happen.
You heard her. She wanted this to happen. But why? Did you not have enough attention at home? You had to bulldoze this pathetically fragile human man's life, too.
He wasn't pathetic!
Stop!
You know what they say. Easy come, easy left alone. So why don't you do that? Leave everyone alone? Even the filth and common trash who are too naive or too stupid to not worship you. Do the heavens and earth a favor. Destroy only yourself henceforth.
I'll destroy you!
Helix grabbed the closest thing to her on the stage. She'd been gearing up to launch a lamp at the alderman's head, but the tighter she squeezed the lamp, the more her hand shook, until it crashed right at her feet.
Dunce? Look what you've done! You've angered the voices!
I said stop! We'll swim the muddy river.
No! Murphy, read your line. This show ends when I say it may. Murphy?
I don't understand, Mistress. Why go this far? I know I shouldn't question you, but I couldn't understand the point right then, and I found myself mute. As Jesse fussed, as he's prone to, and tried to inspect Helix's hands for any reopened wounds, she looked up at him and whispered something. It must have been quite a something, for our dear cowboy companion had never looked nearly so afraid in any fight.
Please, I just want to end the story on my terms.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
The steadiest hands in the West shook as he grabbed Helix's elbows. She threw a glare at the audience before nodding her head, standing on her toes, and pressing her lips to his. It was a surprise, not only for me. A long silence engulfed the theater. When they were done, Jesse's hand still shook as Helix took a step back and said,
I'm guilty. I didn't know, but I did it. I don't know how, but I destroyed Dre.
You see, folks, it's just as I said. The innocent act ends. She?
I ran away to Earth because I was hurt. Because I had no one. Because it didn't feel like I had anyone or anything that would destroy me or that I could destroy in return. So I ran away. And it was awful and lonely and terrifying, but I made a friend. And I learned about Earth, just like Mork in our favorite show. I learned that I was sold a twisted and cruel version of love for thousands of years. Yes, I regret what I did, but I will never regret learning the truth. I will never regret loving the clubs, the dancing, the city, its people. I will never regret falling in love with humanity. The towers, this punishment, my banishment, none of it will make me unlearn that. And none of it will change the fact that I fell in love with Dre. I loved him. I loved him. I loved him.
Ladies and gents, commit yourself to calmly filing out through the western door. I apologize for this strange behavior, but we are quite fortunately nearly at our destination, so please go.
We're at our knees in water. We gotta go.
The cowboy was right. The Missouri River had risen up to my thighs, and I was never much of a swimmer, so we departed. That cursed floating theater, although floating not for long.
They're all swimming ashore.
Where are the lifeboats? I mean, don't they have those now?
Pardon?
Seems not.
As the showboat sank, it remained hooked to the engine-driven rowboat that pulled its drowning body forward. When we three met the bow of the Starlight Leisure, we folded our hands into binocular shapes and looked onward, like sailors aquest at sea. And there we saw, rising from the gray and smoky Missouri River, a black tower, winking at us from afar.
Suppose this boat's gonna keep getting dragged unless it pulls the other one down. For now, it looks like it'll drag us right to the tower.
The horses?
Long as they keep their heads above water, they'll also make it.
And there. Got it.
By the time the showboat had been dragged along to the seventh tower, the water had risen to our chests. So once Helix touched the black obelisk and received whichever enchantments this go-round provided, we turned our faces and swam toward the eastern bank. Helix's spectral bird companion, Coda, flew above our heads. And behind us, our three loyal steeds trotting their ways through the water toward shore. Oh, look, there she goes. We leaned back onto our arms, watching the little engine boat get pulled down into the gray waters of the Missouri. Sun on our wet faces and clothes, our steeds vexed at the tangle of it all. My companions were quiet, So, I did what I do best and lightened the mood.
Helix, if I might ask, what was this tower's reward this time? Wait, shall I guess? Perhaps translating the silent language of trees?
No. Sleep inducement. Pretty much every god gets a version.
All right. Hit me with it. It's been a long day. Tired of sin. Could use some rest.
Yeah? Well, it sounds like you're not the only one. Come here, buddy.
Indeed. And perhaps we can pretend it was all a dream. It'd certainly make that alderman's existence make better sense.
Yeah, and those weird-ass kids.
Absolute demons.
Bossy little brats.
Radio Outcast was created by Maria Fernanda Villarrazaga and J.T. Lachesse, starring Daniel A. Stevens as Charles Osgood, Jade Duong as Helix, Ivory Amor de Francisca as Jesse Rogers, Griffin Otto Deniger as the Alderman, Jamie Hughes as Emmy, Sebastian Sotelo as the voicemail, and Daniel Sotelo as Coda. This episode was written by J.T. and Fernanda and directed by Fernanda. Produced by Eloise Bernier and Kevin Shea. Dialogue editing by Miles Kernwelge, sound design by Rye Dorsey, with music by Samuel Kinsella. If you want more Radio Outcast, you can find us online at radiooutcast.com, follow us on Instagram at radiooutcastpod and X at radio_outcast, or join the Radio Outcast Discord server. If you like what you hear, let us know by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or Good Pods. It helps us reach more listeners, and it gives us a chance to see what you all think of the show. If you aren't sure what to say, but would still like to show your support, you can rate the show on any of those avenues as well as on Spotify. If you'd like to help us continue to grow, consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/radio_outcast. Our patrons have access to behind-the-scenes material, original scripts, and bonus content, including early access to Q&A sessions and a letter from Seth Bullock about the strange duel that took place in the first episode of Season 2. But if that's too big of a commitment for you, if you become a patron at the Coda tier, for as little as $1 a month, you too could get a special shout-out at the end of our episodes, like
Alan L., who is known to have had the most successful performance on the Starlight Leisure yet, the multi-talented Miss Talia W., applauded by many, Patricia D., who once snuck aboard the Starlight Leisure to dodge the law, baker of many delicious treats, Lizbeth S., Val V., who once lost a bet to the alderman and had to help paint one of his many elaborate sets, Susan S. has been spotted among the crowd of the Starlight Leisure patrons once or twice, and who once put the dastardly stagehands of the Starlight Leisure in their places? None other than Fearless Lila. Chelsea S., who has collected photographs of the Missouri River and still hopes to visit. The venerable Bunny Hop, who led a rival vaudeville act many years ago. And last entering stage right only to exit, pursued by a bear, Paul R.
To all of our patrons, thanks again. We appreciate you. And to everyone listening, safe travels.